You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray. Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to the Light Years podcast. Andy Lou, I'm watching Patrick, the football Steph Curry Mahomes, win, you know, collect the AFC championship. The NFL just always wins, man. Like in the preseason, we're sitting here going like, Mahomes versus Brady is probably what they want. And what are we getting? Mahomes versus Brady.
It is just picture perfect, storybook, fairy tale. Like we got Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, a fantastic football game, and just in perfect NFL fashion with a little bit of controversy. But it doesn't matter who wins, doesn't matter who loses. You get Aaron Rodgers.
Everyone's a winner. Yeah.
Everyone wins. It was great. The Bills and the Chiefs, the Bills weren't ready. The Bills weren't ready. I probably would have enjoyed the Ravens a little bit more. Lamar Jackson would have been a little bit more fun. Honestly, Josh Allen looked like Lamar Jackson out there, couldn't throw a football. But this is like, Sam, this is. The NFL does it right, and I think what I am most interested in, because we cover the NBA and we cover the Warriors, is how the NFL is going to talk about the matchup between Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, because it tells something tells me that if this was the NBA version, that there would be a lot more passive aggressiveness and resentment with which the NBA is covered, versus I think in football, we are just going to have a lot of like slurping and a lot of joy. A lot of
no, fun. You're better, bro. No, man, you're better. Yeah,
like that type of stuff. It's exactly what it is. So, man, that's just the football's exciting, man. They figure the shit out.
You know, I always think about this. There was this quote that Tom Brady gave about Aaron Rodgers 3 years ago. He goes, "He's so much more talented than me. If he played for us, talking about the Patriots, he'd throw for 7,000 yards every year. I'm in awe of how talented he is, and you know, he's a great player." I just can't imagine NBA players saying that about each other. Like
we had Shaq.
Could you ever see LeBron saying someone's more talented than me?
No, we literally had
better than him at anything. Yeah.
And LeBron's the easy one. We know what LeBron is. It's we had Shaq go on Inside the NBA tell Donovan Mitchell that he's not as good as he thinks he is. What the hell is that? Like, what are we doing here? Right. And it's just, I didn't see Tony Romo come on the broadcast today say that, well, you know, if I had Tyreek Hill, if I had Andy Reid, I'd have at least.
Let me play with these rules where guys can't hit me. Yeah.
And like, technically Tony Romo would probably have kind of a point doing that, but like, what's the benefit, Sam? What is the benefit for the product of the game, for the love of the game? What is the benefit for any of that being said on a national broadcast? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, wow, we could do a whole pod on this. It's a more fun topic than what we want to get to, which is wherever the hell the Warriors are right now. So recording this Sunday night after just a putrid game against the Utah Jazz. You know what's funny to me? You and I got a lot of shit for pointing out that the starting lineup wasn't working. Next thing you know, 2 weeks later, all we get is everyone writing the same article. Per usual, light years is first.
Light years is light years.
I mean, yeah, sorry. But it's just like, it's very obvious that certain things aren't working. And, you know, let's get into it. But like, it's getting tiresome to watch these games. The Utah one's obviously the worst one yet. Down 22-5 after 3 minutes. Like, you know, Utah's probably going to beat them at home anyway. Like, in Utah's generally a loss for most teams, right? But like, that wasn't even a game. That wasn't competitive at all. And it was just one of those, it was avoidable. It was highly avoidable to get into a situation like that.
I think what makes me more angry, Sam, and I was tweeting, you know, throughout just bits and pieces of that game, I turned off the second half because what the fuck is the point? It's not really the lineup. The lineup's tiresome. It's Steve Kerr. It is Steve Kerr and his inability to make any type of change that would allow his players to benefit. Any type of change. And I think that stubbornness is, first of all, number one, what we called out weeks ago, what you've called out months ago, right? And what we've been talking about for years. And right now, it's come to a point, it's come to a head where Steve Kerr doesn't have the superstars around him to bail him out, to play his little game of the long game versus right now, his little basketball philosophies and all this little cutesy shit. That's what, like, it's really cool, Sam, when you can win championships. It's not cute right now, though. It's not cute when you're an 8-8 basketball team. You were 8-6, you lose 2 in a row. And I'm not saying that they should be 10-6, right? Or that they should be 16-0, but they should not have this point differential of like a 3-win basketball team, despite being 8-8. They should not. And that's on Steve.
The starting lineup is a negative 20.3 net rating with an offensive rating, which is points over 100 possessions, worse than the Process 76ers. Do you remember the name the Process 76ers starting lineup? Oh, there's some Tony Roten in there, maybe a little Michael Carter Williams.
Hey, they can't shoot. It's perfect. Steve's favorite.
Hollis Thompson, I think, was on that team.
Rondae Hollis Jefferson. Oh, you're talking about.
No, I was talking about Hollis Thompson. I can't remember if Jahlil Okafor was not on that team. I mean, it's just, I would consider that like the worst team I've ever seen just because Sam Hinkie was like trying to find G Leaguers at all times. So it's worse than that. The defensive rating for the starters is 114, which is just normal bad. It's not even like, it would only be the third worst defense in the NBA. So the defensive starting five, who he thinks could be a top 10 defense, is the worst among the worst in the NBA. And the point differential, like, I cannot stress this enough, minus 20 is usually the worst starting lineups in the NBA are like minus 3, not minus 20. It's bad. And that's just the numbers. Now let's actually break this down into what's actually going on the court. They can't shoot. They can't defend. They can't pass. They're running a scheme that requires them to pass, which I don't understand what that's all about. And they're just opening every game in a hole. Like, yeah, every now and then they get a lucky against the Spurs where they start well. But like, we saw it the following game against the Knicks. We saw it against Utah. Like, it's just not a cohesive unit. It's not a combination that should work.
There's a bit of rewiring that needs to be done from the top down. I think it starts with Steve Kerr. I think it filters itself into Steph Curry, right? And I think, look, as a coach, if Steph isn't going to be the guy, he's the guy that's so used to playing with who he's played with and the style that he's played with and at what makes him so great, then you just put him in a better position to play the way that he wants to. And he can still play off ball if you have guys that can help him play off ball. Right? Like, I'm not like, you don't have to square peg round hole this thing. You can literally just play Damian Lee. Like, it's not going to fix you losing to the Utah Jazz. Like you just said, they're going to lose anyway, probably, because Utah Jazz are really good right now,
particularly at home. Yeah.
But you're going to have better starts. You're going to have a better fit. Like, we're not light years-ing a starting lineup here. Like, I don't think that's what we're doing. Like, Damian Lee is not this elixir that we're saying is nobody knows that if they do this, this is now the new death lineup. It's so simple. Like, it's so simple that any amateur coach, any amateur GM can say, you know what this lineup needs? Probably more shooting. You know who's a good shooter off the bench? probably Damian Lee. You know who should be playing over Jordan Poole when the game was within two possessions? Michael Mulder. You know why? Because he could shoot. Whereas with Jordan Poole, I honestly don't know what he does well outside of just wear really short shorts. And like, this is just becoming ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, Damian Lee is seventh in minutes on this team. Michael Mulder is 14th. This team does not have enough shooting. Part of that's bad luck. Klay going down just throws everything off. Like, you can't really do anything about that. But the other part of it is, hear me out on this one. I think this is a mediocre roster. I think Steph's a top five player. I think Draymond's still an elite winner and can be a defensive player of the year when he wants to be. And then their depth is questionable. They have some positive pieces, didn't all fit. Like, this roster is somewhere between the 10th and 20th best roster in the NBA. It's not garbage. It's not elite, right? Which means it's up to the coach to find combinations that work, and you're going to have to make trade-offs. Yeah, Damian Lee can't really defend all that well. Oh, well, you're going to have to deal with that, right? You need the shooting out there. What I'm seeing is a stubbornness and kind of a lack of awareness of where the NBA is headed. Like, it's not 1997. You can't get away with four non-shooters on the floor, as we're seeing. Like, they even Steph Curry is the greatest gravitational force the NBA has ever seen, and even he can't break up what is like four dudes who are unguarded behind the three-point line.
What can they really do, right? I think is the question. And to me, it's not about the results of if they make changes, what happens. It's not the results to me right now. It's the process of, can they find the right person in charge to actually make the right decisions moving forward? And I'm not saying fire Steve Kerr, but there has to be a more accountability from, I don't know, Bob Myers, Joe Lacob, someone to say, what are we doing here? Like, this is concerning. This is concerning because it seems like Steve Kerr doesn't care. He doesn't care. I don't think he actually cares that they're losing these games. He doesn't.
It seems like he's more concerned with his ideology being right than winning. And that's worrisome to me. It reminds me of like Phil Jackson disciples coaching teams that did not have top five players, did not have like amazing rosters, where you're trying to run the triangle with dudes who can't run the triangle. And what happens? You finish in last place, right?
No.
That's where it's frustrating to me because I don't think this roster's going to win a title, at least not with Klay Thompson out, right? But I don't see an effort to maximize it. I don't see the stuff that like Eric Spoelstra or Nick Nurse do, where they will change their scheme dependent on the players that they have. Like the Toronto Raptors are actually a perfect example. Although they're 8-9 now, you know, they started awful.
They're back, baby. They're back. Big win tonight against the Pacers.
He's already changed the offense. It's starting to feature OG a lot more.
My guy.
Who's might save my fantasy season.
He's saving mine right now. Yep.
it's like get Boucher in there more. He's made some changes. Matt Thomas out of the rotation. He's done stuff that's proactively made the team better as opposed to just deciding, well, I don't like to have Jordan Poole sit on the bench too long, so I'm going to throw him in the game. Like it's CYO or something, you know?
Yeah, what is that? Look, I that stuff is, I think, awesome when you're the 16-17 Warriors. 17-18 Warriors. I think it's great. You got to get those guys involved because you got a team with four superstars and some super role players.
Right.
And you just, you got
to
get
7-8 involved. Deep with like proven playoff guys. Yeah.
Get McCollum in there for a few games. Get Jordan Bell some run. You're going to need those guys at some point. Maybe you don't really, but at least you want to keep those guys engaged. Right now, you can cut Jordan Poole tomorrow and I wouldn't give a shit. Right. Keeping Jordan Poole engaged is literally the bottom. It should be the bottom of the priority list, right? And like the problem right now is if you are going to trust this coaching staff to build James Wiseman's future, that's also a problem. Like Jordan Poole has no future. I don't care what happens to him. James Wiseman right now is the future. And you've harped on the three-point shooting. I don't care about that as much. To me, it's watching the way he's being used as a center. Like he's not going to be super effective anyway, but it's the level of confidence. It's like in baseball where you bring up like a super prospect and And all super prospects usually struggle unless you're like Fernando Tatis Jr., right? Like, you're gonna struggle, and maybe he
right. They see big league pitching and they're like, oh, this is a lot harder than
it's
the last level.
For 20, like Joey Bart, 2 for 20. Like, he's not ready. And you either like send the guy back to the minors to get his confidence up, or you put him like in an 8-hole and you give him a little less pressure and you let him figure it out, right? And right now it's like, I don't know what it is with James Wiseman that they're trying to do.
So I had Aaron Larsall on the pod when you weren't here on Friday, and he said, I don't know why they're trying to run the Cheesecake Factory menu offense with him. Like, over confuse him with way too many reads and too many things to do. And I like that analogy because it's kind of true. Like, the goal should be like dunk and defend, dunk, hit a three, yep, and defend.
Yep.
Even, but like, to bring it back to the shooting, he should be spotting up, trail three in transition, popping, set your feet, take it,
pick and pop. Yep.
If you're open, spot up in the corner, things like that. Instead, we get Steph setting a down screen for him and him moving, trying to pivot as he catches it and shoot like he's Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson. And I'm just sitting here going like, well, of course that doesn't work for him, you know? So to me, the development question is, are we trying to develop him to be effective, or are we trying to develop him to fit a system that he may or may not fit? Like, what is the goal here? And this is where everything gets worrisome, where I feel like they're trying to recreate 2015. And I just don't know that that'll ever be possible. Like, I don't know that you're going to find another Iguodala. He's such a unique player. Like, player skill sets change. The system should change. Like, the league is not moving more towards what the Warriors did. The league is moving more towards what the Rockets did. More shooting, more spacing. The two things that matter most in winning games is generating space or taking away space, right? Well, like, on either end.
You know, if James Wiseman had walked in here and he had the feel of rookie year Draymond Green, then I'd say, yeah, run this thing. Like, right, do right. do the pinch pull stuff, do the four high stuff, do the like read and react offense, and let him kind of pick and choose what he wants to do. The guy, I don't think James Wiseman knows what, like, I don't think he even knows what a back screen is at this point. And why are we wanting him to play back in what you're saying in 2015, right? If he had walked in, he had that skill set, by all means, absolutely. I think what happened with Steve Kerr is he had this system in place and he walked into a situation, and he was smart enough to walk into a situation with the Warriors and say, I've got all these great high IQ players. I can implement this thing and I have a championship team. That's what happened. Fantastic. But now you got to learn that's not how it's always going to be. And you've got to change up how, you know, you got to change up ideologically, like what you want to do. Also, the other thing, Sam, that annoys me, since we're kind of hammering this point about Steve, so move on a little bit, is the talking, the yapping. Just not every game. The guy's got something new to say. Every game, pregame, he's got something new to say. Either, you know, like, we're not going to make an adjustment here, I think we have great potential. Or the next game, it's, you know, we're just trying to take it one step at a time. You know, once Klay comes back, we'll be a tender. All this, like, every game, it's some new bullshit. And like, that to me is like the Phil Jackson mode. I think he thinks he's some like basketball genius savant where he like thinks he can push all these buttons and like he can do all these little cute things. And all of a sudden, like, Steph is going to come out here. Or no. He's going to, like, Kelly Oubre is going to come higher and hit like 6 threes. Like, I'm just going to throw Nico Mannion in, Sam, just so Draymond's and Nico Mannion's going to like suddenly like be this great guy all of a sudden because he's a great passer. It's like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I want to bring this back because we've danced around the same thing. So for us, it's really just the process. That's really what it's coming down to. The record is what it is. I don't feel like the process is moving in the correct direction. I don't see lineup combination.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Patients that make sense. It feels like a lot of, it feels like preseason most of the time with them. And I'm wondering how long that'll go. It's getting frustrating. Like, you saw the numbers. Steph with the starting lineup is disgusting. And then he spends his whole time making it up. Instead of, the starting lineup should be optimizing him because he's the best player on the team, right? So all this points to, I don't know what direction they're going with it, and it doesn't feel like it's a positive one.
Yeah.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you're coming up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to Roman.com/lightyears now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/lightyears and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/lightyears and get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/lightyears. Get started now to save $15 off your first month of treatment.
All right. Let's see. Where do we want to go from here? So they are playing the Wolves tomorrow, or Monday, as this is coming out. And I think we need to talk about, the Wolves are terrible. The Wolves are terrible. They're probably going to play. They're probably going to get a couple wins here. Everyone will feel a little better about what they're doing, and it'll gloss over the fact that the process has been largely problematic. And, you know, but we do have this Wolves pick to talk about. So let's go to the Wolves pick a little bit. How about that?
Yeah, make it feel a little better about ourselves.
Yeah. So I want to bring this up right now. The Wolves have the second worst record in the NBA. And which might worry some Warrior fans, thinking that means they will not get the pick. Right now, the lottery odds are 40% chance the Wolves land in the top three, 60% chance that the pick lands 4, 5, or 6. In other words, more likely than not, the pick conveys to the Warriors because it's top three protected. I will say this, this is playing out pretty well for the Warriors. Yep. In terms of whether you want them to draft a guy or whether you want them to package it for an asset, them having the highest pick possible is great.
Yeah, I didn't get any better than this. I think also pretty funny that they win the game without D'Angelo Russell. And it looks like D'Lo is not going to play tomorrow. I don't know.
Quite questionable. So
maybe the Warriors have a less chance to win since D'Lo is out. They're a mess. And I think the best part of this deal is that if they, for some reason, the pick doesn't convey, they get an unprotected pick after that, and the Wolves have shown no ability to get better the season after. So it's like, it's just win-win all the way around. Like, I don't think that this team is getting any better as long as D'Angelo Russell is on the team as a high usage player.
Anthony Edwards, a centerpiece, yeah.
Yep, Anthony Edwards is fine. He looks really athletic. He's kind of fun to watch, but he's not helping them win games anytime soon. Karl-Anthony Towns, please stay healthy. Hopefully he'll be back as soon as possible, but I don't think even with him back, it changes too much. So overall, I think all good things for the Warriors. I know you wrote down a few names. I don't know if you wanted to go over some of the names that are in college, college today.
I just like to put names down. yeah, we can go over some of the names in a minute, but I wanted to talk about this. So I've seen some Warrior fans saying, oh, it's going to be even better next year unprotected. And I staunchly disagree with that because you don't know what the Wolves are going to do next offseason. In my opinion, if the Wolves end up with a top three pick, their GM is going to be aggressive because he knows he's getting fired if they do that another year in a row. So I don't think you want, I think you need this pick to convey it for the Warriors. I don't think pushing it down the road helps you too much. So I want to say that. All right, let's move this forward a little
deep sigh. I am in on Jalen Suggs before we get to questions. I would really, 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 I know I haven't seen all the top 10 guys. We haven't seen Kuminga or Jalen Green, but Jalen Suggs, Sam, I think is the easy selection. And I think he is a very possible selection at number four. I think it's Cade. I think it's Mobley because of size.
Cade Mobley will go in the top three in some order. And then it's like, from what I'm seeing in the draft right now, the top five feels fair. Like there's a top five and then there's a second five. And, you know, this is subject to change.
Yeah. Course.
But, like, I do think the top five will be Cade, Mobley, Suggs, Kuminga, and Jalen Green, who we haven't seen yet. That can obviously change. But and the order is to be decided. I feel pretty confident Cade's going number one. But if the Warriors can get one of those five players at the four or five pick, they'd be very lucky. I'm super excited to watch the G League bubble just so I think everyone is just so we can actually see game footage of Kuminga. Like I've seen some clips of Jalen Green, but like, it's not the same thing as watching a game. We can look at the Kentucky guys. Like I was super hyped on BJ Boston. Then you start watching games. You're like, you know, he might be good, but like, it's going to be a while before he's anything. You know, he played himself from the lottery to like maybe not being a first rounder.
That's insane. And, and I guess the final piece before we get into questions is, do we even trust this coaching staff to put these guys in the right places anyway? Like if they draft Mobley, if he falls to four or five, like, is this team even going to develop him the right way? Right. Are they even going to let Jalen Suggs be the floor, like the vision point guard general that he is? And I don't even know if that's going to be the case. So, but it is exciting.
I actually think Suggs would be fine with the Warriors, like Tyrese Halliburton in Sacramento, where you're like, because he's got like, he's very intelligent. Like you watch him play and you're like, this guy has,
I love him.
Beyond his age, so to say, like he plays like a vet, I guess is the best way you could put it. Right. Where you watch him and just like, those are reads that like 30-year-olds make, not 20-year-olds.
He would play right now for the Warriors. I mean, like without a doubt, he would be the bench guy over.
I think he'd be doing exactly what like Tyrese Halliburton's doing for the Kings, where you're like, it doesn't even matter what his numbers are. Anytime you watch him, you're like, that guy's just everywhere. He's just making positive plays at all times, right? So right. I don't know. Let's move forward. So we have some questions here. Before we get to questions, let's do one more thing here. Okay. How could we forget this one? You know, I know how we could forget this one, because the Utah game was so disgusting, we forgot about this one. Steph Curry passes Reggie Miller for second all-time on the three-point list. It really does suck that the Utah game was that bad, because, like, it didn't even mean anything. Like, I didn't even think anything of it, right? Like, because you're just, like, so annoyed with what we were watching in the game that you forgot that Steph kind of achieved a statistical milestone.
To me, it felt like the Don Nelson winning the most games in the NBA coaching.
Right.
Like they were celebrating that in a season where they were just terrible. And it felt a lot like that to me watching. I wasn't even watching the game when that happened. I knew what was going to happen in the second half. We all knew.
They're down 30 at half. So yes.
Like, can you blame people for not watching it on Saturday night? But I think one of the things where, I don't want to make this pessimistic. I'll say this. There will never be someone like Steph Curry who can shoot this well on and off the ball with this volume and still have people doubt how good he is. I think that's the best way I can put it. This guy this many games to pass someone as great as Reggie Miller and still be disrespected the way he is by a lot of media, a lot of the other NBA players, by really just national coverage. I think that's one of the things about Steph Curry that will go down as like, wow, like this guy was that great. And we spent a lot of time saying, discussing how some of the things that he couldn't do in his career.
I was having a conversation with Ethan Strauss, actually, friend of the show. And he was discussing how he thinks Reggie Miller is historically underrated, which is kind of an opinion I have too. And it just occurred to me, 90% of the reason Steph is underrated relative to his greatness is because I still don't think people understand how important shooting is. Like, there is this idea that being a ball dominant player makes you better, because traditionally that's how we view the game of basketball, right, Andy? Like, when you were in high school, the best player is the point guard, right? Like, that's just kind of how it goes. When you are, you know, at all youth levels, the best player has a ball in their hands, right? Like, you don't have the best player running off of screens. But if you are that good at shooting, you have more impact than anyone. Reggie Miller was the best player on the Indiana Pacers, who were the second best team in the 90s. Like, they beat the New York Knicks, even though Patrick Ewing was supposedly better. You know, for being a better player, Reggie Miller sure outshined him in every playoff series. They beat everyone in the East except for the Chicago Bulls. And if your biggest problem was you couldn't beat Michael Jordan, you know, it's going to be okay, right? Like, he's one of the greatest clutch performers of all time. And I just don't think people mention him as one of the greats of that era in the way that they should. And to me, that was always interesting, because like the people will say like Clyde Drexler was better than him. No, I really think Reggie Miller was the second best shooting guard of the 90s. You know, Jordan, obviously the best, but Jordan's the best of all time. So what are you going to do with that? Anyway, to bring it back to Steph, it just watching the way Reggie looks at him and spoke about him felt very NFL-ish. We talked about it, where there's a lot of like reverence and like, I'm so happy it was you who passed me, and like, you're so good, and like all that sort of stuff. But like, more so, it just reminded me, like, we can harp on how much shooting matters, and we believe it. I believe it, maybe more than you, I don't know. But like, there still is this general idea that shooting equals shooting, and it's not like the most important skill. And that's the fundamental reason Steph is underrated. Like, people, there's a segment of people who think Westbrook deserves to be mentioned in the same class as Steph.
Wow, I didn't see the Russell Westbrook take incoming. I also think that Steve Kerr doesn't understand how good shooting is and how important that is, despite him being a shooter and coaching Steph Curry. Like, I think
self-hate.
Like, I think, yeah, self-loathing. I think there's a bit of Steve Kerr that thinks like, yeah, like, shooting's great, but you also need to be able to do all these other things, and doesn't understand shooting is the end all be all, because you know what the goal of basketball is? Well, basketball is to be able to shoot the fucking ball into the hoop.
The goal is to have one more point than your opponent.
Yeah. And I think that's something that he's, frankly, not understanding today. And that's Steph Curry thing. And that's a Damian Lee thing, a Michael Mulder thing, a James Wiseman shooting threes thing. He didn't want Draymond to shoot threes for whatever reason. Like, that's all this stuff that I think that like is one of the reasons why Steph Curry is one of the most underrated basketball players still today in his time. And I think that'll still keep going on even when he breaks Ray Allen's record.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things where everyone talks about how important shooting is, but then when it comes down to brass tacks, they rank these players who are worse shooters as being more valuable. Like, in some ways, it reminds me of like in like baseball, when everyone's like, oh, you got to hit home runs. But then like they, you know, oh, but he's not as good an all-around hitter. I'm like, I don't know, dude, he hit 50 home runs. That's pretty important, right? You know, like that sort of thing, right? So it kind of ties together in that fashion. Anyway, congrats to Steph. Steph is 411 away from catching Ray Allen. He will probably do that in the middle of next year, give or take. Yep. I haven't looked at the total number of games. And he will catch Ray at the age of 33, and Ray played till he was 40. So Ray has 2,973 threes, basically like a few short of 3,000. Pretty confident Steph can get to 4,000. A full 1,000 plus more than the next closest guy.
Actually, one more thing is that Steph revolutionized the game by shooting threes, especially off the dribble and especially as far away as he did. The other thing is, and people will say that a lot of these were like Reggie Miller and Ray didn't shoot as many threes as Steph. Steph didn't shoot as many threes as Steph in the beginning of his career. Can right. you imagine if Steph came in into the league now? Like, not only would he still be the best shooter, if he was shooting 10 threes a game today, he probably would have broke this damn record a year or two ago. Like, that's, it's really like, it's,
I actually think that's the thing. Actually, that's where I disagree with you, is like, I do think someone will break all Steph's numbers in the future. And then there will be people will be like, look how many more he's making than Steph. And I'll be like, I don't think you understood until the age of 27. Steph didn't really have the green light to take 12 a game like Trae Young does. You know, like Steph was taking, you want to know what's funny? The 2015 Warriors took 27 threes a game. That was like top five in the NBA. That was the first title, right? That would be dead last. And we're only 6 years later. It's dead last in 2021. So like the just the proliferation of shooting is like, I mean, could you imagine Trae Young a decade ago? Like, could you imagine a player entering the NBA doing that? Like, it's not even something that like would be allowed by any coaches, right? Yeah. All right, we're going to get to questions. I had to bring a little positivity in there, a little Steph Curry. Congrats. Since we didn't get to this one on the last one, we're starting with our guy Option Zero, who we apologize to for misreading part of his question last time. Okay. Can we discuss the power dynamic in the front office coaching staff? Early in Kerr's reign, the brain trusts seemed to have less centralized power, with West, Myers, Kerr, Schlenk all participating in healthy debate, even if Lacob did have the final say. Newsflash, owner always has the final say. Since then, Kerr has seen Gentry and Walton leave his staff, West get lowballed, and Schlenk take a promotion to Atlanta. Empires die when they get fat and lazy.
Do we need to read that
just
part?
Just turn on the news. I should have read that before I read it out loud. Now we're seeing it on the court. When Sam ranted about the incredible self-stroking move Smiley Geach was, he crouched it as being a small move in a big picture. Poole's option extension is the same arrogance and ego trip. They tripped, blah, blah, immediately benched. Well, isn't Wiseman just some big version of Smiley Geach? No 19-year-old rookie helps a big team win. One with zero competitive experience seems even less likely. And then you have Steve Kerr as the coach. That seems even slimmer. Yet, GSW preached how they could bucket all these odds while also winning. They're failing at both. The team is planning to send Nico Mannion to the G League, ostensibly for more seasoning. Mannion played less than a season in college and was rated a top 10 player out of high school. Wiseman played less, yet they're closing. Why? Because the Warriors front office and Kerr need to show everyone how smart they are. That is a hell of an email. There are a lot of questions to respond to there. So let's start with the first one. The front office brain trust. So everyone loves to talk about the Jerry West, Travis Schlenk, Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, that like, really reigned the dynasty. We've seen West and Schlenk leave, right? Now it appears the brain trust is a lot more of Bob Myers, Kirk Lacob, Steve Kerr having a lot more influence than he lets on in terms of personnel decisions, and Larry Riley running player personnel, or director of player personnel and everything. Do you feel like the front, there's a brain drain there? Do you feel like that's an issue?
I mean, the answer, the bailout answer is, I don't know. We don't know. The answer that I think is important here is, I think the issue is Steve Kerr having too much power in what he wants to do. And I think that was different from a while ago. And I think, everybody was wrong. Jerry West was even wrong. He wanted players that were not very good.
Shout out Deion Waiters.
He wanted players that, you know, weren't NBA players. But there were people in the front office that told Steve Kerr, hey, you're an idiot. You can't do the things that you're doing today and expect to be a winner. We've seen Steve Kerr's run as the Phoenix Suns general manager, right? And we've seen some of the moves that he's made in the past. And I think that's the current issue today, is that you got Steve Kerr, you've got Bob Myers. Bob Myers is best friends with Steve Kerr. They're always going to agree with each other. And then you've got the Lacob Suns. And I think a problem, the main issue is that Steve Kerr has a lot to say with what he wants to do with the players that he has today. And that's directly contradictory to what player personnel once in players. And I think now you have that very weird situation, which is what Ozzie's talking about, is that maybe Steve Kerr wanted Wiseman, maybe not. Maybe the Lakers wanted Wiseman, maybe not. But they drafted Wiseman, but the core issue is they're not using him the right way. Maybe they should have drafted LaMelo, Sam. Maybe they should have drafted Tyrese Halliburton even. But
shout out Isaac Okoro.
And like, it doesn't matter. Like, I think Halliburton right now would probably be the best fit for this team. Like, you put
he's the best rookie in terms of playing a basketball game tonight. Yes. Yeah,
and especially on the Warriors. Like, I don't, you know, you put a Halliburton on, you know, like maybe the Harden, like the Nets, right? Like maybe it's less effective, but you put a Halliburton on the Warriors. I think it's like, it's elite. Like, it's, that's beautiful. It's a beautiful move, but they drafted Wiseman. And I think that, I don't know if this is how let's take Kirk. I don't know if this is how Kirk Lakeup would want the Warriors to use James Wiseman, I think is the core issue right now with this team. Because these guys aren't going anywhere, but if what the front office envisions when they pick players is one way, and Steve Kerr is using and coaching these players the other way, then what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, so everyone loves to point to Jerry West because he's a big name. The Warriors getting Jerry West is, I often like to say, it was like their first big free agency acquisition. Like, you never saw someone with the name and cachet of Jerry West take a job with the Warriors, right? But there is one thing that Jerry West did exceptionally well that I'm not sure anyone in this front office can do. Jerry West is not afraid to disagree. Jerry West is not afraid to tell Joe Lacob he's wrong. He's not afraid to tell Steve Kerr he's wrong. And it's not easy to tell the boss they're wrong. And it's not easy to tell someone as passionate and opinionated as Steve Kerr they're wrong. It takes a very strong personality to do that, right? And that gets to kind of the point, which is, are there dissenting voices in the front office? Who is the person who is willing to push back in a healthy way? Because ultimately the best decisions are made when you don't have blind spots, right? And to not have blind spots, you have to have people who are willing to take other people on. And when power is overly centralized, that doesn't always exist. I mean, I don't know why this is turning into a business podcast, but you know, it's not easy. And I think that's the reality we're dealing with the Warriors. It's like they're desperately in need of someone who's willing to challenge Steve Kerr.
There should be no reason that Nico Mannion is the name here, so I'm going to pick on him. And the question is like, hey, the team is planning to send Nico Mannion to the G League. He was rated a top 10 talent. Wiseman had even played less games. Why the hell is Wiseman playing and starting? Nico Mannion got into the game after Draymond Green was taken out because this is like, I wasn't surprised. I was unhappy, but I wasn't surprised because this is what Steve Kerr does. You can see the thought process is, well, I need someone who's a floor general like Draymond. So the closest person to that on my bench right now is Nico Mannion.
He's trying to give his team a shot in the arm. Yeah.
And also that, right? He wants to be able to, well, if Nico Mannion plays well, everybody's going to be happy. And then like, it's going to be a cool, cute little story with this guy. And that is a fundamental error in judgment right now. You can do that when you have Steph and KD out there. And well, Draymond's out, so we're just going to put this dude out here and he can do some fun stuff and Steph and KD are going to bail us out. Right now, with where the league is going today and what the Warriors have, that's a problem. You can't do that and expect to win basketball games right now with this team. And the question is, then why the hell is James Wiseman playing, right? And to me, that's less so of an issue. Like, I don't see too much of a problem with James Wiseman starting these games. James Wiseman closing, I think, is probably a better way to put it. Like, he shouldn't be closing some of these games if he's not playing well. But I think that's also more, the issue is not so much with why is he playing, it's what is he doing when he's playing? Why the hell is he forced to do all these things when he has no idea how to do them? And it's too much Steve Kerr. It's too much Steve Kerr. That's all I've got. It's too much Steve Kerr.
Yeah, and I mean, we should have touched on this. Wiseman is a bigger part of the reason the starting lineup is bad than Oubre. But like, to me, it's just all of them. Like, this, the cocktail doesn't work, right? Like, it's not like one specific player is the problem as much as like, I think all of them together don't work. To bring it back to this question, he brings up, is Wiseman just another big move version of Smiley? I don't agree with that. I do actually see the talent with Wiseman. I think the issue here is they're kind of rudderless. I don't know what direction they're going. Are they trying to build Wiseman for the future? Or are they trying to compete next year? Which is it, right? Like, they're just, there's a lot of mixed signals with them where I'm not sure if they're trying to win now or win in the future. Are they, is this Steph's team or is this Wiseman's team? You know, that type of stuff.
I think there was, I think with Wiseman and the Smiley Geach, I think that's a little out of bounds. I think there were Smiley Geach, I don't think anybody had any respect for or think that he's going to be good from top on down. I think with Wiseman, there are a lot of people that want to change Wiseman. And that goes for the
talents. The like, talent's obvious too. Well, like, just because he's nowhere near there. Like, it's very clear he has a lot of potential.
I think Steph wanted him. I think Draymond wanted him. I think Steve wanted him. I think like the Lakers. I think there were a lot of people aligned on wanting James Wiseman. So look, if that's not the right move, if it should have been LaMelo, if it should have been Halliburton, if it should have been a Coral, like, so be it. But I think most people in the front office were aligned and the players were aligned on wanting James Wiseman.
Did Ralph Walker want him?
and I think this speaks to Steph a little bit to look, I think Steph wanted Wiseman. I think he's right in wanting Wiseman, but then it's, if you want him, then why aren't you using him the right way? Cause you want him because you want a guy that can finish at the rim. You want a guy that can protect the rim, right? Then why the hell is he a guy that's playing, that's running motion sets? That's the core of that offense when the possession's getting started. That should not be the case. So that's I think the core issue. I don't think the problem is drafting him. I think it's the problem is, well, how the hell are they actually using him? A lot of guys wanted Wiseman, and I don't think they're wrong.
So I think if we want to, I mean, so to get back to Ozzie's big picture question, well written email, got some nice slander in there at times. I think the Warriors just desperately need someone to inject some new ideas. Doesn't need to be a new coach. Doesn't need to be a new GM. They just need to bring someone else into the mix who's willing to say something different. Because right now it feels, I don't want to say stale, but that's the only word that comes to mind. I need someone in there who's willing to say, Steve, let's stop trying to do multivariable calculus. Let's just concentrate on getting these guys to figure out cross multiplication, cross division, you know,
and
let's stop shooting for Smiley Geach in the second round. Let's get some competent players in here right now. Like, just someone who's willing to voice a different opinion.
And I think that's like one of the issues with let's take, for example, Mike Dunleavy. He wasn't drafted for that, Sam. He wasn't hired for that. He was hired because he's best friends with Bob Myers, and Bob Myers just wanted a butt buddy in the front office. Like, there's no rhyme or reason to why he was hired.
Actually, just to push back on that a little bit, he was brought in because Bob wanted someone who's going to be loyal to him, right?
That's what I'm saying. He wanted to friend. Well, I guess that's not the same. But what do you know? Like, what has Dunleavy done anything that you would say, to your point, is really pushing back on what the Warriors have done so far this season? I would say no.
But I mean, actually. Great point, because Dunleavy's in year two of being a front office guy. He might be great, but like, that's just different than Jerry West, who's done it for 30 years. That's different than, like, yeah, you're right. He's someone who's in year two of being a front office guy is probably not going to take on the power structure, right? You know, like, it takes someone who's a little more seasoned and let's just say has a little name cachet to do that, right? Like, part of the reason Jerry West is willing to do it is Jerry West is like, I dare you to fire me, right? You know,
it would have been nice if Daryl Morey was hired. I was really all in on Daryl Morey, but I mean, what there's no fit there.
Loyal Light Years podcast listener Daryl Morey?
Yeah. All right, let's move along. We got a lot of questions. Let's rip through these things.
This is tied in from Danny. Does Kerr want to win games this season? If not, what are the priorities this year? That is our big question. That's what we've danced around forever. Like, they want to win. They want to develop for the future. They say now matters, but Nico Mannion gets some run, and we got to make sure Jordan Poole doesn't get stiff sitting on the bench too long. I don't know. Like, I don't know what to say, but like, at a certain point, someone has to call it out and be like, let's have a coherent vision, man.
If they want to win, I'm sure they do. But he only wants to win his way. That's the top priority. He only wants to win the way that he he only wants to win. It's love of the fame, Sam. It's love of the fame coaching. He just wants to win the way that he knows how, the way that like our guy Colin Returnal is going to write a great article on Steve Kerr if he wins the way he does, because it's cool. ESPN is going to have a great feature on Steve Kerr saying his style, his scheme was the one that built this team back to the dynasty. That's how Steve Kerr wants to win. He doesn't want to win by playing the way that he should, by moving towards where the league is moving today. So,
all right. From Fake Logic, seems like a lot of the aforementioned debates are rooted in aligning conflicting timelines. Well, it's related to the question we just answered. Wiseman's development, Kerr's system rotation, marinating time, Steph, Dre, Clay's window, fandom for individual players aside. How do you guys think a high-level franchise should prioritize those? And how long do you think is a reasonable time frame? Okay, that's actually a really good question.
Fake Logic. Also, shouts to Fake Logic. He's all up in the Discord chat every day.
He is. I think top priority should be trying to win while you have a top five player on the roster. Steph Curry is the best player the Warriors have ever drafted. You know,
and probably will ever draft.
Maybe not. And he's definitely the most iconic. I mean, he's iconic for them. I think it's more important to them that he retires for the Warriors than anyone else, because it'll really establish a brand identity. Like, this is Steph Curry's fucking franchise, right? Like, if they want to be the Lakers, they got to have Kobe. They got to have Magic Johnson. They have these guys who are from birth to death with them that like exemplify the roster. Okay. Wow.
That was really good. No, I really like that. Wow.
And so it's a little, I think it's important. Also, Steph is one of the best players in the NBA. When you have one of the best players in the NBA, you have to go for it. You know, like, if you're not willing to go for it when you have Steph Curry, what are you waiting for? You're going to trade him for assets to hope you draft another Steph Curry, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're firmly still in your window. So the priority has to be winning with him.
What type of high level franchise do they want to be? Do they want to be the Miami Heat? Do they want to be the LA Lakers? Or do they want to be kind of like that elite mid major like Toronto, right? Like, what type of franchise do they want to be? I think that they want to be the Lakers. And then they also want to be the Spurs. Like, I should have thrown the Spurs in there. I apologize. But they want to be both of those guys. And like, this season tells me that you can't, right? It's being the Lakers that you want to spend a shit ton of money, and you bring in Kelly Oubre, and you have this like splashy team. You still got Steph. You still got Draymond. Next season, you're still going to get Clay. But then you still want to be the Spurs. You still want to be able to develop guys, and you still want to be able to get James Wiseman in there. You know, ironically enough, Sam, it's the Lakers that have been excellent at drafting and identifying players in the draft and getting role players in today, like Alex Caruso, right? And Brandon Ingram drafting him, Lonzo Ball, who's a fine player. There are other guys that are not, like Talen Horton-Tucker, right? Maybe. But like, Kyle Kuzma is a second round pick and he's playing closing minutes.
Number 27.
Okay, late first. Hey, still
the could point have Jordan stands. Poole. That's could the have same, Poole. Yeah, that's the same right? Range as Jordan Poole.
Or as any of the Warriors' late first round picks, right? So ironically enough, the Lakers are the Lakers. They get LeBron because they're in LA, but they also hit on all of these role guys that make them the juggernaut that they are today, where they should win a back-to-back title. And I think the Warriors, as a high-level franchise, to me, should focus more on being able to identify and draft these type of players, and they have not. That is the number one thing for me, like, that these high-level franchises can do, is they identify players that are good, and then they develop them. I feel like they've identified James Wiseman, who could be a high-level player, but they are
definitely
high failing.
Potential player. Yeah.
Definitely failing in developing those guys. To your point about winning today, let me ask you this. If you could trade James Wiseman for Miles Turner right now, would you? Because I think the Pacers would have done that move in the offseason if the Warriors had put that on the table.
You know, life would have been a lot easier if they did it in the offseason and we never saw Wiseman in the Warriors jersey, right? So that's the thing. I don't know. I don't think I would do it, because I just think you got to wait for a little more. But that's me. So, you know, it's tough. I want to move
Sam,
on.
Sam sources say before we move on that that Wiseman and the pick could go for, or Wiseman himself can go for a lot more, like Bradley Beal is on this team next season type of thing. So,
oh, that's not exactly at all what I'm saying.
Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
All right. Do you guys think if the NBA from Rishi Desai, do you guys think if the NBA had an NFL like roster mobility, being able to cut players easy, there would be more parity in the league? Right now, it seems like a few bad moves can screw a franchise for 3 to 5 years. I don't know that, because the NBA is so star driven that I don't know that having more flexibility with like man 7 through 15 on the roster is going to move the needle too much. I think what would change is if it was harder for stars to move teams, if it was harder for James Harden to just decide, hey, yeah, I'm done, I'm going to Brooklyn. You know, I think that's what would change. It's
ridiculous. I think a fundamental issue across the sports here, though, is that Steph Curry can change a franchise. Like, it takes a lot in the NFL to change a franchise. Like, even Aaron Rodgers, right? If Tom Brady was on the Atlanta Falcons this season, like, I don't know, like, if he's changing that franchise. But if you put LeBron James on the Atlanta Hawks, like, that team, and maybe a shittier team, the Atlanta Hawks at least are a playoff team, on the Charlotte Hornets, right? Like, that team's in the postseason.
Right.
So, right. I think, you know, LeBron and Aaron Rodgers, they're at the top of their game with both sports. I think it's just, that's just like the fundamental difference that the NBA can't really do anything about. I agree with you on the superstar mobility stuff, though. I think that's more of a who cares about the NBA type of stuff. It's just that it's hard to care about a lot of these NBA teams outside of your own. It's just hard, man. And I think, like, we sat here, Sam, today, and we watched the Bills. We watched the Chiefs. Those aren't our teams, but we watched them. And I think we would watch Chiefs Sunday night football games in the regular season because of Patrick Mahomes. I don't know what the NBA can do there. Like, I don't think there's anybody there that you would sit down and watch. Like, nobody's watching, sitting down and watching Giannis. Nobody's sitting down and watching Luka, even. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just, we've had a lot of podcasts about ratings and how the NBA should sell their players, but I think just the issue is just that it's a smaller, it's only five guys on a court at one time.
Fine. Final question. You were correct, by the way, from Fresh Donuts. If you had to bet who gets fired first, Nash or Kerr?
I mean, is it even close?
Yeah, this isn't even a question.
Is it even close? Yeah. Steve Nash can be out of there in about 2 seconds. Steve Nash got the job because of Kevin Durant. KD likes him. And I think part of KD is probably like, well, I like him because I can walk all over him, like, type of thing. Right. I love Steve. It's Nash. That is not Steve Kerr. Steve Nash, one of my favorite players of all time. But I think he's kind of like a guy where a player drafts because he knows that he can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah. I mean, also one of them has won 3 rings, even if we're very frustrated with him. And the other is a first time coach. First time coaches don't last long. Like, it's just an easy bet, you know? So, all right, we're going to leave it there. We'll be back midweek. We're going to have Bonte Hill on. Probably be talking after a Wolves win. Maybe the sky won't be falling.
You know. Stafford's to the Niners, you know, that type of thing.
Aaron Rodgers to the Niners.
Yeah, that type of stuff.
That's the kind of me. Ooh, Rodgers with Debo, Ayuk, Kittle. Ooh,
that'd be fun. But Rodgers with Shanahan? Anyway, speaking of another Steve Kerr type of guy.
And then we're out of here.
All right.